Musician Caleb DeCasper knew from a very young age he wanted to be a glam rocker. After seeing Little Richard's appearance on Sesame Street singing Rubber Ducky. As a young performance artist, Caleb made quite a statement eating raw cow hearts with blood pouring out of his eyes.
But Caleb's own heart is in glam rock music. Hard electric guitar sounds matched by equally fierce costumes and makeup. Caleb lays on the makeup to reflect his every mood. When he's pissed off, his makeup looks angry. And when he's feeling great, his makeup looks gorgeous.
Today, Caleb DeCasper stops by the home studio during his first ever tour to play songs from his new album, DeCasper, which includes his hit single, Good Boy. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. We know you enjoy Feast of Fun uninterrupted, and we thank you for your support, because Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you.
Want to see clips of today's show? For $1, go to patreon.com/feastoffun and check them out.
But before we begin, let's listen to Johnny B. Good from Caleb DeCasper's new album, DeCasper.
Every time Johnny comes around, he can never be good. He's always got to bring me down and make my heart sink to the ground. He won't tell me that I am pretty, he won't tell me I am neat. Just last week, you said I make you feel alive. I don't know what game you're playing, but I'm tired of doing this work. Why can't you just be good, Johnny?
Today is queer glam rocker Caleb DeCasper.
Hello.
Hello. Who's traveling the country with his band, and you just happen to be in Chicago.
Yeah.
Nice to see you, Caleb.
You too.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Now, Caleb, you're generously playing some of our favorite songs from your new album, Good Boy.
Oh, my new album is DeCasper.
DeCasper?
Yeah.
But the song Good Boy is the final track on that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the biggest one, yeah.
And I said, it was like, don't let that fool you, honey, because she is as wild as they come. Welcome to Feast of Fun. And it's nice that you wore all this lovely makeup.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your fashion and makeup aesthetics?
All right. You mean in general or today?
Well, what you're wearing. Well, talk to us about what you're doing right now.
All right. Right now, I'm wearing a Christine shirt because I'm representing my Austin friends and community in Chicago. I've got some denim cutoffs. I've got some really big, scary acrylics.
Mm.
Those, you cannot wipe your ass easily.
Well, luckily, I've got someone to do that for me. So
that's what band managers are for, right?
Yes.
What's your band manager's first name?
Ashley.
Ashley. I need a flush.
I did number two again.
Oh God.
Sorry, Chipotle. She's gonna hear that. They just put extra toilet paper around.
Well, this is kind of a dream for you, right? Is this the first time you and your bandmates have been traveling the country?
Yeah, this is my first real and extensive tour.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What kind of tour is it? How long are you touring for?
We will be gone for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. We've got 15 shows in 14 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How are you getting around?
We have a tour van that is a piece of crap.
Oh, yes. What's her name?
Her name is Goosey.
Oh, Lucy Goosey.
Are you guys, you're not sleeping in the van, right?
No, yeah. Actually, the good people at Hilton struck a deal with us, and we have hotel rooms every night.
Nice.
Oh, man. That is some good shit.
Yeah.
Well, all right, Hilton.
Now, you grew up in North Carolina, in Charlotte or Chattanooga?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a town that begins with the letter C.
Yeah, I grew up, the first part of my life was in Athens, Georgia, which is a big musical town.
And then, the B-52s.
Yeah.
And R.E.M. came from
my great aunt used to do heroin with B-52s.
She would make those beehives?
Yeah.
Where's your beehive?
No, you said do heroin.
Yeah, but not then I do tried hair. To cover it up.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was just like, why does he not hear the word heroin in there somewhere?
I just heard the first word hair.
Would they inject it? Snort it?
I have no idea, but okay. She says they used to put little bells on their clothes because it sounds cool when you're high.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I'll have to remember that.
Next time you see somebody jingling around.
It also keeps evil spirits away.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I heard that too. Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty conservative community you came from, right?
Yeah, so I was a teenager, which is the formative part of your life. I was a teenager in Charlotte, or 45 minutes outside of Charlotte. And North Carolina is very conservative when you get... I think the whole thing overall is conservative. Mm-hmm. It has conservative progressives. Mm-hmm. But then when you get into the rural parts, I mean, people have their own rules.
It's regressive.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shoot. They're like a Republican, but with a Democrat on their title or something like that. Or
yeah.
So your style of clothes and stuff like that, were you doing that back then or was that something you came into later?
No, I've always done this. Mm. Yeah.
And so as a kid, like me, you were watching Sesame Street and said, I can do that.
Yeah.
And you got inspired by
Little Richard.
Little Richard.
Yes. Aww. I remember the seed was put in me by Little Richard when I was a...
That sounds real... That's,
Little Richard put a seed in me.
If you were alive, he could get in a lot of trouble.
I just remember being, so small that I couldn't have memories. One of my first memories is watching him sing about a rubber ducky and playing that piano.
Yeah, it's considered one of the greatest performances on Sesame Street of all time.
Yes. Well, it had an impact on me.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
Then you wore rubber vinyl for the rest of your life. Then.
No, I was just into him. I was into him playing that piano, and I was into him the makeup. I knew he was... I remember knowing that he was
his flamboyance.
It's interesting how somebody like Little Richard could be so... a flamboyant, but yet still be embraced by, a very conservative America in many respects.
Yes.
He'd be on primetime television. People just, because it was show business. People didn't question it.
Yes.
Liberace could be that freak and people were just like, well, that's how it is.
Well, that's the thing, with drag too, of any kind of drag, whether it's theater or music or, lip syncing songs at a bar. It's the idea that, theater is a safe space. Because we have this sort of rules. And in your early days in North Carolina, you considered yourself a performance artist. Mm-hmm. And your performances were pretty wild.
Yeah.
So you're sort of like challenging that safety, the idea that, we don't know what's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
So you pull out a live heart. Was it a cow heart?
Yeah, it's been cows and lambs and...
And you just, what did you do with it?
I would eat it.
Was it good? No. Isn't it safe?
Would you put salt on it? Or
no, I would just eat it.
Pickled?
Yeah. No, I mean, just raw. I would just eat it.
So like Ozzy Osbourne kind of thing.
Ozzy Osbourne, Alice
only
Cooper.
Sober.
Yeah, Alice Cooper type stuff. But everything I do is not for shock value.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like I had read somewhere that in a lot of cultures that are far away from me, they
they why is that so funny?
I'm going to say it again. In a lot of cultures that are far away from me, they put negative thoughts and negativity into that organ because that's where the center of everything is, and then they devour it, and then that is it's done. You know.
The Welsh have like this something that's like called the bread eater, and they would put like the bread on like a dead body or something like that, and somebody would come along and eat it, and it was the sin eater, so they would eat the sins of that person.
Oh, that's wild.
Well, the thing for my generation, which sort of the term performance art came of age, it was definitely a reaction to not seeing LGBTQ people represented in films and television and in commercial theater.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, the art galleries started becoming theatrical spaces and had people sort of transgressing those boundaries, you know? So like, in terms of like what theater was, it was the idea of not just blurring the lines and not making uncertain outcomes, but also gravitating towards the personal, right? So you're not doing somebody else's story. You're telling your story to that audience.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What was that story that you were trying to tell back then as a young man? And is that your gender identity, by the way?
Yeah, I am. And we could get into that later if you want me to answer the question.
But what was the story that you were trying to tell when you were young and living in North Carolina?
The story that I wanted to tell was that I wanted to be a musician and I wanted to make music. But, I mean, everywhere that I turn, I'm either told by people like, oh, you should probably calm down and get, like, a real job, or you...
Was that Taylor Swift telling you to calm down?
Yeah. No, that was people...
That's her latest song.
Yeah.
people who cared about me or, you know, they wanted me to be realistic.
Sure. And safe. I'm sure there was security, you know, they wanted you to feel safe and...
Yeah, but I didn't want that. And then I get further into it, and I was actually told at one point by a college professor that nobody wanted to hear my gay songwriting point of view, or I needed to keep it to myself and not share that. And
what was that conversation like with that person?
It was very short.
Yeah.
let me read you your quote back to you here. Caleb, the world will never accept a gay songwriter's voice or point of view.
Yeah. He told me that to my face because we had a short conversation about, I was learning an Elton John song at the time. And I was like, isn't it interesting that he writes about women, even though we've all known he's gay, you know what I mean? And how many people have to do that?
Oh,
so many people have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't see a lot of people really pushing for that, you know?
It's a very white Anglo-Saxon thing happening, because in mariachis, a lot of the women, when they sing from the male point of view.
Oh, okay.
So, like, Linda Ronstadt, when she came out with Canciones de mi Padre, which was a great song that drag queens were lip-syncing and singing live at the time, she sang from the male voice.
Oh, that's great.
Which sounded very like dykey, you know. It's and part of it is like it's the idea like we're remaining true to the song. And that's usually what like musicians will say. Like, I wrote this song about a love between a man and a woman, and in some ways that it's sort of the idea of performance art, right? Is that we're talking about our own stories, which don't fit into that mainstream because we are marginalized either through money, through politics, through power, or just invisibility.
Yeah.
And that's why like a TV show like Pose, I think is resonating with so much people besides being a good television show, besides being well written, it actually is showing us some really talented trans women of color and showing us this scene that until the series started was, you know, best captured in Paris is Burning, the documentary. But even that was just a tiny little sliver, you know, and now it's turning into this fully realized world and it's really refreshing. You know, and in terms of your like music, you know, I'm curious to know, like, what is it about glam rock that attracted you to a style? In term, you know, because a lot of people sort of criticize Lady Gaga or Nicki Minaj. They may be definitely glam, and they may be, you know, sort of pushing those visual boundaries, but they're definitely not, you know, the rock of glam rock.
Yeah, I think there's like a couple aspects to it. The first one is I want to do it right, because we have, like I said, we have the Elton John, we have the Freddie Mercury, we have the even Pete Burns, you know, was all over the place, you know.
And rest in peace.
Yes, rest in peace. So many people, they change their pronouns in their songs, and then it's like they're wanting people to know that they're gay.
By not saying the right pronoun that aligns with their own lives.
Well, they show it instead of saying it. And I feel like commercial powers that be told them they couldn't say it, and so they showed it. But now I want to say it and show it. Like it should be, you know?
Now, we've been talking for a while. You have some amazing songs from your album. Would you like for us to play one of them?
Yeah. There was
one about a boyfriend of yours that suddenly disappeared.
Yeah. It's called Havana Hope Boy.
Let's hear it. Folks, the entire songs are available through links at our website, feastoffun.com. What's the story behind that song? Because you were saying in a past interview that every song is based on a story, which is very kind of like country, right? And also you're very inspired by different music legends.
Yeah, so the EP is every song is a part of me, so that people can get to know me. And then it's paired with two things, a traditional musical style and an artist who made me who I am. So Havana Hope Boy is a mixture of a style, like a synth pop style by Lady Gaga. And then the story is, the traditional music behind it is kind of like Cuban lounge music. And the story is that my most recent boyfriend was from Cuba, and he spoke only Spanish. And I can communicate in Spanish, but it's not super fluent. And we still had a really strong, deep connection. And I helped him get his papers and apply for everything.
Citizenship.
Green card, at least. And there's a definite route for that for people who are from Cuba. And they denied it to him, and it kind of turned his world upside down.
So things fell apart between you and him because he couldn't get a screen card. Things fell apart because
I work a lot, but this boy worked. Mm-hmm. He worked all the time.
Now, you're saying that there's a set path for people from Cuba, but because of the political climate we're in right now, it was difficult for him to get that green card.
Denied because of lack of information, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which sounds like miscellaneous to me. Mm-hmm. But
It's not like he can mail you or a letter or have a friend that he knows send you a message on Facebook? Or do you think that she's just looking for a little privacy at this point?
He's probably looking for privacy. And
so that's what makes it hard.
It makes it hard. I have to respect what he wants.
But you feel like he's kind of like in a funk or something.
He's in a funk. And I'm honestly hoping that's what's happened because the alternative, he's not on social media anymore. Mm-hmm. Can't get in contact with him. The alternative is pretty bleak.
You think he may have been deported?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. I hope not. He was such a good boy.
And that's kind of a reality of this day and age, you know. It's like, as Americans right now, we have concentration camps where we're putting children in cages, but we're also packing, you know, thousands of people into a space that's really supposed to equip 30 or 40 people.
And people are making millions and millions of dollars off that, the private prisons that are being sent up.
And these people who have not committed any crime are sort of being punished, and some of them are dying. And it's and part of it is, like, you know, I remember in high school when we read about the Holocaust and concentration camps, I'd be like, I would have shown up there and punched Hitler in the face. And, you know, you watch Indiana Jones, you know, where he accidentally hands the, it was the third Indiana Jones movie. He accidentally hands the book with all the secrets to the Holy Grail to Hitler, and Hitler being sort of like Trump, this vain despot. The dictator thinks it's an autograph book, signs it and hands it back to him. Mm-hmm. And part of it is like, yeah, you know, I think, you know, in terms of, what you do for society in terms of creating this artwork, it is actually, it's the bedrock of stability, because a society with strong culture is really, really difficult to manipulate politically.
Yeah.
And one of the consequences that we've faced is because of the success, overwhelming success of social media and, you know, the internet and all this kind of defragmentation of culture, is that we don't leave the house often enough to see each other face to face. And so by you sort of touring around the country and getting communities coming to see your shows, it actually really helps fight the fascist, oligarchs that are trying to basically keep us at home and keep us on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I also have to say, we've scheduled a lot of stops that are traditionally more conservative and red because those people need to see, they need representation. They need to see that it's okay and it's cool, you know? But the flip side of that is, like, when I go to a gas station in West Virginia being myself, but they also see that I'm a nice Texas boy, you know, we get along, and then maybe it changes some things.
What part of you is the nice Texas boy?
The one that I discovered about 3 years ago when I moved to Austin.
Yeah. One thing I find myself doing, cause I lived in Texas for 6 years. I don't know if this is true for you. You go, yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. And they're like, oh, that is so polite. Thank you so much for being nice.
Yeah.
But some people get mad. Because it's like you're basically calling them old.
Yeah, you're saying, yeah, especially with women, they don't like to be called ma'am.
And I'm like, all right, ladies.
I still, when people call me sir, I'm kind of like, okay, I get it, but, you know.
Is this sexual?
And it's
Mark.
I'm one of those non-binary people that, like, people throughout my life, they have thrown every gender and insult to me. And, like, things, I get upset about a lot of things, but my gender identity is not one of them. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is a privileged perspective that I have, that I'm very lucky and blessed to have. In terms of your gender identity, because, you know, blurring the lines of gender and having, you know, a lot of makeup and bling and clothes and nails is a really important part of your onstage look. But it seems like it's also part of your just everyday life, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. So what I'm trying to do is express this part of me that's definitely there. But I don't. So I'll give you an example. On this tour, if we are ever confused as a drag queen act, me and my manager make sure that we correct them. Because it's not that I have anything against drag queens. I love drag queens. I have a bunch of drag queen friends. But
don't we all?
Yeah. But like I want to be a man wearing makeup and wearing skirts and dresses and acrylic nails. And if I'm a female impersonator, then that kind of disappears, that aspect. I want to show people that men can express themselves in many different ways. Emotional ways.
Well, your gender identity can be anything, you know. In terms of drag, drag is just transforming yourself into a beautiful creature of your own imagination.
Yeah.
And you can be a tourist, or you can live there full time.
You can be gender fuck, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I'd be, gender fuck.
So, yeah. you're okay with using that title of drag queen, but it's more the fact that you rather draw focus to your glam rock aspect, your roots.
Yeah.
What were some of the glam rock stars of the past that really got your wheels turning?
So Alice Cooper was a big one. A lot of people might not consider him exactly glam rock, but I love it. He's got the horror aspect, which I love bringing to a table. Yeah, scary stuff.
Horror.
I'm really surprised he's still with us, you know?
Oh, yeah. I was at Austin City Limits for a time, and he came through 3 times.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what about Ozzy Osbourne? I mean, he's really heavy metal, but to me, it's like the best story of Ozzy Osbourne is he was so high on stage that a bat flew into the lights. This is actually a documented story. And it fried up, fell to the ground, and he thought somebody had thrown him a fake bat. So he grabbed up the bat and bit the head off and is like, yeah, Satan, woo! End of the show, his manager's like, okay, we're going to get you to the hospital, get some rabies shots. 3 giant needles.
Yeah.
Inject all kinds of stuff. You're not a pleasant experience.
He's one of my heroes, too.
Yeah.
And if you go back far enough, he was glam, too. He's got some sequins jackets and stuff, so.
But the ultimate glam rock queen, I would, and maybe you don't agree with this, but it's, you know, Dr. Frankenfurter, Tim Curry from rock, and your eye makeup sort of paying tribute to that right now.
Yeah.
Well, the original glam rocker was Elvis, right? Or so they say.
Or is it Little Richard?
Well, Liberace, I guess, used to put on shows and he'd have these fabulous outfits, and he's the one who told Elvis, he's like, listen, bitch, you need a look.
Yes.
And well, so he came up with slap that fan.
Bitch, you need a look.
Queen, you need a look. Vivacious.
We steal that from Vivacious.
So Liberace convinced Elvis to be more decadent, to be more showbiz, to just razzmatazz, make them sparkle.
But yeah, Little Richard was probably doing it along the same lines too. But of course, you know, he probably wouldn't get the credit that Elvis would.
Yeah, and you know, certainly like Dee Snider, Twisted Sister, we're not going to take it.
Yeah,
they're you know, OG glam rock people who sort of made that transition to hair metal. But their early days, you look at them and, you know, they indistinguishable from any drag queen or Dr. Frankenfurter. I mean, their makeup was really heavy.
Yeah. You also have the New York Dolls.
Oh, yeah.
I was lucky enough to meet Sylvain right after I moved to Austin. He was very nice to me.
What did he say to you?
I don't remember.
He said, be true to yourself.
Something like that. Yeah, that's what we're writing in the book. Yeah.
I believe in you, Caleb.
You will go on to do things that I never even dreamed possible.
What is it that motivates you to make music at this point? Because you've done so many amazing things, and you're sort of like, you're on this journey right now with your bandmates. Mm-hmm. It's going to end, right? You're going to go home. What is it like the drive? Is it about just being with your friends and having this shared experience? Or is there something, is it about the music?
There's something inside me that just has to.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do this. And I have had to tour. I've had so much pent-up anxiety and energy inside of me for about 10 years because I've known I needed to tour.
You're a different person from when I first met you.
Am I really?
Yeah. I met you with the Boulay brothers introduced me to you, actually, at Austin International Drag Festival. And I think I was telling you about my fan fiction theory of the origin of the Boulay brothers. Mm-hmm. That's for another podcast. And because they don't want people knowing or speculating on their origin. So I'll leave it to that. But it's a pretty funny story. But so I'm talking to you and you just were like, you had a lot of anxiety about your future. Like you just didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And then so thanks to Sweet Gwendolyn, mm-hmm. who connected us together. And now you're doing this amazing music.
Yeah. I love Sweet. They're amazing.
Sweet baby, shout out to you.
Hi, this hey, happened Sweet. Because of you.
Sweet's having troubles downloading the podcast because they can't afford to get enough space on their hard drive. So somebody hook up Sweet. If you got an old computer in Austin, Texas, pass it along. Yeah, but actually, Sweet's one of our big advocates and really believes in us and stuff. The story that I met Sweet, we were at a club. And Sweet came up to me and handed their camera and said, would you mind taking photos of me? And so I did this really douchey thing. And I just took a picture of my, like a selfie of myself with them. Mm-hmm. And I handed it to them. They were like, did you know that was Fausto Furnos from Cooking with Drag Queens? And then Sweet started listening to the shows and just been one of our biggest advocates. So thank you, Sweet.
Yeah, thank you, Sweet.
Now, let's go into another song. There's a song called Elephant.
Elephants.
Yeah. It's about pachyderms.
Yes, I heard.
Let's hear it.
Start over. My brain is fucked. Me a stuffed elephant, it's cute as shit, and a testament to the way you react to the way I type. A ribbon round your heart, a baby, I'm your guy. On that day, you swept me away, but now you say you'd like to abstain from the beauty that is attached to my face. I should have known from your lips that you wouldn't play safe. Oh, you don't know what you've done to me. You buy me a gift and you fill me with glee.
Elephants!
Yeah.
Yes!
What's your attraction to elephants?
You want to hear the long or the short?
You like them big, don't you?
That's the short, yeah.
Okay, we're going to be the long then.
All right, the long is that some boy was trying to get my attention, but then didn't want my attention, and it was a game, which a lot of heterosexual men do to gay men. And he bought me an elephant from a vending machine.
Okay. Oh, I thought for a second I was like, he bought you an elephant.
From a vending machine.
From a circus.
That must have been a really big vending machine.
Yeah, it was big. It was at Walmart.
It's like the Simpsons episode where they bring an elephant to their home and they have to spend millions of dollars trying to feed it.
Did he have a special connection with elephants or something? Or?
No, that's just what came out.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Aw. Yeah, it was nice.
Well, if you don't like it, I have a friend down the street who has an elephant collection. He's probably got, I don't know how many, I'd probably say he's got 200-300 elephant type things in his house.
When you have an elephant collection, you have a everything collection. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like he collects, I'm sure there's a Pez dispenser collection somewhere. And Barbie dolls. And plastic flowers. You know, vintage iPod and iPhone accessory collection. You know, things like, and that's part of it is like, you know, human beings evolved from pack rats. So we're just, you know. We're just like naturally gravitated to wanting to keep everything.
I try really hard not to keep things. I feel like I'm always in motion and I might have to leave soon wherever I'm at because of art. Mm-hmm. And so I really try not to keep a lot of things.
What's the worst thing that's happened to you in this tour so far?
The worst thing?
Yes.
Oh.
Or maybe the most exciting and sexy story. We all got drunk and we had sex. It was great.
I'd say I don't have time for
sex. Because most of the guys are straight that you're touring with, right?
Yeah, they all are. Yeah.
You're the queer person in the group,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We all are.
I mean, they all are.
They're all too identify as sort of nonconformists of some kind.
Yeah, we're all rock stars, nonconformists. But yeah, I haven't had time for sex on this tour. It's just go, go, go.
Mm.
Yeah, barely have time to sleep.
No one's throwing a hotel room key at you at this show?
No.
No. Well, it's go, go, go. It's hard to come, come, come. You can put that in the song.
Or you could just ask the audience, just be like, hey.
You're a rock and roll star now. You can just pull one from the audience and be like, we're going to fuck tonight. And they have to do it.
Well,
it's part of the consent of going to see a, you know, buying the ticket is consent.
You're right.
Well, that's the thing, you know, in this day and age, if you're an entertainer and you're putting yourself out there and photographing yourself and you get enough success, then people inevitably, as you get older or you're busy, people be like, looks like Fausto's not going to the gym as often as possible. And there's this wonderful video that was went viral where it's Lady Gaga is playing, and I guess she looked really good, and somebody in the audience went, skinny!
Yeah.
You remember that, right?
I remember that, yeah.
And she just shoots them a dirty look. And so to this day, every queer person in America is always like, skinny! Which, to me, I've been really impressed the way that that little moment in time can just be captured and transcended, you know?
Yeah, that one little two-second thing.
And that's the thing about, you know, live performances is that you're there with your audience and they're you know, wanting to taste you, to smell you, to experience you.
Oh, yeah.
They're coming and they're paying the ticket and they're buying your merch and your music. And part of it is just like it's kind of like a very thrilling experience, I imagine.
It is. It totally is. And you do the same songs every night, but every night is not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Something wild happens new every night because of that transfer of energy that happens with the new people in new cities. So that's the best part of it, I feel like.
Yeah, I think it was... Was it Richard Pryor? One comedian said it's, no, it was Chris Rock, who said it's like, he envies all the musicians because as comedians, they always have to come up with new material almost every single show.
Yeah.
Whereas musicians are like, if you don't play that song, which we'll get to Good Boy at the end of this episode, they're going to be so mad about it, you know?
Yeah.
And do you ever like, I mean, you guys aren't there yet, but it's like, I can see you guys in the future having a hit and then sort of getting sick about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're not sick of anything
yet. Not yet, so that's a good place to be. You know? You're like on a honeymoon.
I also try to come up with different renditions of everything because I'm a classically trained pianist, and so I can rework things and, you know, that keeps my band happy. Mm-hmm. And
as a kid, when you were playing the piano and learning sort of classical music, what were your favorite songs to play? When you were like, because music can be therapy, especially if you're a young queer person and you're just not feeling like connected with your family or your community, the piano and the music can really, you know, be very soothing.
Yeah. My favorite song, I remember when I had a favorite song, and that's with everyone who learns piano. I also teach sometimes. So with everyone who learns piano, there's a point where it just becomes pleasant to listen to the practice, and then there's just this transformation that happens with confidence, and it's you become more of an artist, you know? And my first song that I remember really loving was Alfred Hitchcock's Marionette theme.
How does that even go? I'm not familiar with that.
Dun 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 dun.
Oh yeah,
dun dun dun. Yeah.
From a TV show.
Yeah.
That's called Marionette.
Yeah, it's called like.
But that's pop, because you I was reading in your interviews, you had a classical training and then you had a sort of modern music training.
Yeah, so that was like around when I was, that was more when I was being classically trained still, trying to learn like what grace notes are and whatever.
So they were sort of like having you learn all kinds of time, you know, music from all time periods. And
when I got older, probably around 16, that's when I started learning like song structure, song form, pop music. My favorite pop music was, I used to like devour Elton John and Lady Gaga books, and I would see like chord progressions and how like
these words match with the chord that was put in here. You know what I mean? Things like that started to come together for me.
What's the most satisfying Elton John song to play on the piano?
That's your song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
That's such a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Why is it, in terms of music, like, what is it, that quality of that song that makes it so satisfying to hit on the keys?
Well, first of all, it like tinkles. Mm-hmm. The melody is a tinkly melody. Second of all, it continuously flows. So that dun 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 dun. It just keeps going and going. The whole song is like a wheel. So it's nice to play.
And in terms of like classical music, like, you know, everybody learns Beethoven's, what is it, Minuet in G. Bum, 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 bum. But, you know, and that, what excited me when I was a kid, it was that there was two melodies happening at the same time.
Yeah.
So if you played the left hand, it was a completely different melody. Da na da da na 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 na. And then the right side is da 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 dun dun. And together they formed a new song. And to me, that just blew my mind. And I was always like, as a kid, just sitting on the piano, getting so excited about this this phenomena that you could put two different songs together. And then I discovered musicals, you know, and in that moment in a musical when one person's singing and then the other person's singing, and then they start singing together at the same time, but they're different songs and melodies. Yeah. And you're like, how is this even possible?
It's beautiful. It's harmony. That's how it's possible. One of the greatest thing that exists in the world. Harmony.
Music is the international language, darling. Yeah. Do you get homesick during the tour?
No. I'm super happy. I'm at home wherever I am.
Are you home here?
Yeah.
Don't move in yet, but no, okay, you can stay.
Okay, well, you're part of the rent, is.
What are you looking at? You have a couple of gigs coming up here, and I just want to tell people about it. It's in the bottom here of our list.
St. Louis, Wichita, Tulsa, and Denton, all this month in June. You have a very full Pride week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's, the end of Pride month.
Yeah, we're going to end this tour up next week.
And where are you going to, are you marching any Pride parades, or are you going to avoid the unwashed masses, as RuPaul calls them?
Well, Austin, you're from Austin, but they have different ones. They have the Queer Bomb. That already just happened, right? And then you guys have another Pride event coming up.
I went later to Queer Bomb, and Austin's Pride is actually in August, when everyone's face melts off.
Yeah, so they want it really hot, right?
Yeah, as hot as it can be.
You know, I'm doing the Iron Bear with Chick Fellatio and Bully M Rhapsody. I'm going to be in drag there. August 1st, people.
Shout out to Chick and Bulimia.
I hope you're all there for me.
What numbers are you going to do? Do you know?
Oh, it's a secret.
Oh, it's a secret?
Yeah, I don't give that stuff away.
You will be in drag?
Yes, ma'am.
Will it be pretty drag or booger drag?
Well, me, I always aim to be pretty and always results in booger. But booger is the new beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
You know? I reject your patriarchal notions of what beauty is anyways. Now, Caleb, you told me that when you're feeling rotten, you paint your makeup rotten. Yeah. And when you're feeling beautiful, you paint your makeup beautiful.
Yeah.
What emotions are you feeling right now?
Right now, I'm so tired.
Well, that's what, you're a musician, so you're allowed to do cocaine now.
Yeah. So just
get somebody to show, get you some lines, and you know.
I probably like a tall glass of iced tea. North Americans don't understand the power of iced tea.
I mean, people on the northern North America.
It's got to be sweet tea. Can I get sweet tea in Chicago?
No.
I can make some for you.
Once you pass the Mason-Dixon line, there's no sweet tea. Sorry.
Yeah, right. So
you'll have to figure out some other way to get diabetes and rot your teeth out.
On it.
But I can make you some if you really want to. We had a professor here, and he wrote a book called Sweet Tea. And so he made us, it was stories of black queer men in the South. And he made us sweet tea, like authentic sweet tea, like his grandmother would make it. And I cannot, like, my teeth hurt from drinking it. I'm like, I feel them, they're being eaten away as we speak. Yeah. It's crazy.
It made your, like when you eat a candy bar that's so sweet, you feel like it's actually giving you the cavity as you speak.
Now, you won, NPR had a tiny desk contest, and you were a winner. And what did you win?
I was not a winner.
Oh, you were not a winner.
No. One of the top five.
I was one of the top.
Okay. Yeah. And what was the contest?
And that's unusual for you. Sorry, I couldn't help think.
We got that on film, my blank face just now. I was like,
what?
I was one of the top picks for the week that I submitted our video on the All Songs Considered music blog.
Okay. And why is it a tiny desk? I mean, what's the dealio with that?
It's just a kitschy little thing that they do.
It's like the side editorial desk, so they call it the tiny desk or something like that.
Yeah,
it's for the interns, so you know they can say this is really good.
Yeah,
because usually people who have been working in news for a long time, they just know what is in the bottom of their coffee cup. You know, even we feel like shut in sometimes. You know,
yeah, it's a fun thing, and it's a way that I mean NPR is really great for communities' music that they're in. And it's a way to get new music out there and exposure for people who are doing great things, but might not have the money to show people, you know?
Well, Austin, Texas has so many resources for musicians and, you know, some really great radio programs that feature music like yours.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a really great town to be in, and congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
I'm really looking forward to your future endeavors, Mr. DeCasper.
We've enjoyed this album, so we look forward to the next one.
Yeah. Now, how good of a boy are you? What is... this is... I would say of all the songs I actually, you know, sat and listened to most of your catalog, I definitely think this is probably your strongest song.
Yeah.
And you agree with it because you put it, you know, front and center in your albums and your website. What is it? What is the song about and who's it inspired by?
It's about, you know, being good and being bad. I mean, it's a really simple concept and I really, that's it. It's just about, are you a good boy? Are you a bad boy? You have boyfriends who are good boys and bad boys.
Does it drive you crazy when you're leaving somewhere and then someone tells you, says, Caleb, be good. And I just turned to them and said, you'd be good at it.
No, I actually love when people are well-versed in my stuff and they make puns about being good boy. I like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, like in the South, they're always telling you this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, I was going to commit a crime. I was...
You know, I see what you mean.
I wasn't going to put on my seatbelt.
Yeah, I wasn't going to use a condom.
But now that you said it,
y'all
right.
Be good. Y'all be good now. That's it.
I find it, you know, in some ways it's condescending to tell people to be good.
Well, I always have loved it. Like, this sick little part of me loves it because it's like, yeah, you know what I'm up to. You know?
You're up to no good, honey. Well, rock on. Keep the glam rock spirit alive. I love what you do and I love what you stand for and you look fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on Feast of Fun.
Thank you guys for having me over in Chicago.
Of course, of course. I want to remind the listener too, we wouldn't be able to talk to fantastic people like Caleb if it weren't for you and your sponsorship of the show at feastoffun.com/plus because your membership means everything to us.
And you noticed that we were talking about his makeup on the show and you're like, I can't see it. This is an audio podcast. Well, darlings, membership does have its privileges. Go to patreon.com/feastoffun. And for the low, low price of just $1. I mean, come on. I saw you stuffing that dollar at that dancer in the club last weekend. You can give a dollar. You got a dollar in there. And give us a dollar. Make us feel a little holla. And you get a Feast of Fun sticker. And you get to see Caleb, you know, gasp and when I said he was the top. Thank you so much. We're gonna be leaving you guys here with the song, really, you know, your finest work right now, Good Boy. Caleb, goodbye.
goodbye.